Can a broken relationship be healed without forgiveness? Welcome to The Good Work. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author for this week's lesson, as we continue our series on revival and reformation. Our particular theme for this week is Reformation, Healing Broken Relationships. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas and Daryl Bigger. Let me start with that opening question, man, and I'd be interested in your reaction. Is it possible to heal a broken relationship without forgiveness?
Well, that whole subject of forgiveness is a very interesting and personally important one to me, Alden, as you know. I've come to teach a class after doing some research with colleagues here at the university about that subject. And I look forward to this class every year, and I keep learning with students and from students as we explore this.
What are some of the most significant insights that you picked up from yourself and your students in the last year?
Well, let me tell you, let me respond to your question directly, and I'll be happy to illustrate that as we have time. My experience is that if you do not restore forgiveness in a relationship, that there may be the appearance of friendliness, but it is superficial.
Mm-hmm.
That the profound nature of forgiveness is really necessary to heal a relationship.
I agree with you 100%.
Mm-hmm. Many people in our world have broken lives, traumas and tragedies that have interrupted relationships with significant people. And I think there are some of those that, for one reason or another, are not possible to restore because the trauma has been so severe, or both participants are not willing to work on that. Forgiveness comes for the sake primarily of the one who has been hurt. And it's a way of them being willing to live, to let go of the resentment and anger and pain that was there. That in itself may not always lead to a restoration of the relationship, though in one illustration from Scripture, we see that that did eventually happen, though after a period of some significant confrontation between Paul and John Mark particularly. Mm-hmm. The forgiveness happening can take place individually as well as in dialogue with one another, mm-hmm. and is really crucial for fully restoring that relationship.
And I think the reason for that is that forgiveness presumes, I mean, it's built on the fact that if I have wronged you, that if I come asking for your forgiveness, I am acknowledging that I have some fault.
Mm-hmm.
And I think until one human being who has done wrong acknowledges that we feel unsafe in trusting them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to allow ourselves to be vulnerable again to somebody who has not acknowledged their culpability, however large or small it might be. Mm-hmm. The recognition of fault that results in the request for forgiveness then I think digs down underneath the injury and says, okay, you acknowledged the problem. Now we can start building something back. Without that, there is no, we have not gone down to the bottom of this thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think it's possible to forgive somebody who doesn't ask for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's that kind of forgiveness is much more challenging. And I'm not sure that even that would allow the restoration of a relationship until that person, having already been forgiven, acknowledges
sure.
the receipt of that.
Sure. I think you're absolutely right. We just read a newspaper article recently about a man who had killed several people, and those who were working with him in pre-sentencing described him as being insensitive to the degree of pain and disruption he had caused in other people's lives. Even though he was admitting that he had done that, he was not acknowledging
mm-hmm. yeah.
the degree of his offense.
Yeah.
Well, you know, even among the best people, the most gentle people, you have often real blindness. I think of this quote from Henry Nouwen, put at the head of our study guide, "Forgiveness is the name of love among people who love poorly. The hard truth is that all of us love poorly. We do not even know what we are doing when we hurt others. We need to forgive and be forgiven every day, every hour, unceasingly. That is the great work of love among the fellowship of the weak, that is the human family."
You see, without some contrition on the part of an individual in the face of wrong or pain that they have caused, I don't see any way to rebuild trust at a deep level. But Darrell, you said something at the beginning of this that intrigued me, and I agree with it. I think that forgiveness has a profound impact not just on the offender, but on the person who is offended. Mm-hmm. When you offer forgiveness to someone, you're giving away the right to vengeance. You're giving away the feelings of animosity that seem to reward in wrongs that have been done. You give away anger. You give away all those things and say, for the sake of restoration, I'm going to give those things away.
And I see that kind of profound forgiveness coming as the result of adequate grieving.
Yeah.
That there is a facing of the reality of what was lost,
mm-hmm.
the mourning of what was given up and sacrificed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those steps must be taken first before real forgiveness can take place. Otherwise, it's a kind of childhood mother made me say,
"Yeah, make nice."
Sorry,
kind of
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, which causes me to think about Jesus on the cross. You know,
mm-hmm.
that his words, they're offering forgiveness to people who had no idea what they were doing, is a profound statement about forgiveness and also about God.
Yes.
Okay? Because he knew full well what was going on. He knew what was going on. He also knew that they were ignorant of what they were really doing. They thought he was some petty criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to offer that forgiveness leaves those of us who are human with a profound challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know.
But you know that insight which suggests, and I've kind of articulated the position for myself of what I would call a practical universalism. What I mean by that is I have no idea what makes people do what they're doing.
Sometimes you do.
Well, but you know, the genetic things, well, I mean, there are just all kinds of things. I may have some clues, but I can still call people to account for their inappropriate behavior, but leaving the matter completely open as far as to how God sees that. And that's been very helpful for me.
It's a way of changing our attitude toward the offender, which is precisely what Jesus did on the cross.
Yeah.
He adjusted his perception of those people to accommodate their limitations.
And I think it should be said that forgiveness is a very expensive commodity.
Mm-hmm.
Very expensive commodity. But it's because of it. You know, somebody once described forgiveness as the fragrance of a crushed rose that was crushed by a thoughtless passerby. The fragrance still comes up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very expensive commodity, but I think because of that, it has enormous power. I've read some fascinating stories about people who suffered great wrong, who have let the pain and the agony be surrendered in forgiveness. And
well, my suspicion,
those are very moving stories.
My suspicion is that when Jesus said you should love your enemy, his first concern was not so much for the enemy. other words, when I am angry, it is very destructive. Now, there is this kind of delicious feeling that when you get the last word, you know, or you just, that was good. But that ultimately is incredibly destructive. And so for very selfish reasons, in fact, I went through a period of time when I was very angry with people in the church. And then I discovered to my horror that I was destroying myself. So for very selfish reasons, I had to turn that around and point those issues to myself. And as I say, initially it was very selfish because I didn't want to be the kind of person who is marked by anger.
You know, I read an article in Time magazine a long time ago on the subject of forgiveness. It must have been about 1983 or 1984. And in there was a story about a woman whose husband had left her with four kids. And she talked about how for 10 years, well, she watched her kids during the day and catnapped, and then at night, while they were sleeping, she worked in a factory across the street where she could keep an eye on the house. And she said for 10 years, her thoughts were always about hoping that her husband would get his just deserts and that, you know, trouble would come to him. And she realized that she was the one who was trapped by the offense. Her husband was off doing whatever he was doing. And forgiveness enabled her to become free of that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But Alden, I guess we're suggesting that the revival and the product of revival produces the willingness to forgive mm-hmm. and to be restored. Is that the point?
That's clearly the case. If it's the right kind of reformation, we seek to restore broken relationships. That means if we have hurt someone, we have an obligation.
Yeah.
But if we have been hurt by someone,
yeah.
That has a different set of things that yeah. we need to look at.
In Alden, where I grew up, if you went and asked for something and somebody gave it to you, it was considered to be very polite and appropriate to receive the gift with two hands, not one hand.
Huh.
You don't receive a gift with one hand. You put both hands out to receive it.
Huh.
And I like that image because I think that the gift of salvation, when you realize it, you will hold out both hands.
It's a two-hand operation.
Not you won't have one. You'll hold both hands.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah.
And forgiveness is the same thing. If somebody offers you forgiveness, put out both hands, not just one.
I would like to take just a few minutes, and this is a bit of a detour, but an important one. What about the role of anger? It doesn't come up on any of the virtue lists in the New Testament. Patience is on them all. Anger is on none of them. But what is the proper role of anger?
Well, and you think of Paul's comment to the Ephesians, be angry,
but don't sin.
Yeah, and he also said,
quote from the Old Testament. Yeah,
don't let the sun go down on your anger. Yes. Don't nurture it. Yeah. Anger is a very good emotion, but very mm-hmm. powerful and therefore very yeah. dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So exercise it sparingly.
It seems to me that forces us and allows us to face the truth about what's going on in our lives. We yeah. can't run away from ourselves if there is
or from issues that are
yeah.
wrong.
Yep. You bet. Which leads you to the Matthew 18 text, which is in the yeah. the study guide for this week. You don't just ignore these things and hope they'll go away by themselves. You have to deal with them.
Yeah, but you deal with the principles, not yes. around behind a bone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. No, if we could be more straightforward with each one another, as Matthew 18 suggests that we should be, I think we would all be much more helpful.
And Paul's a good illustrator of that, right? He's quite confrontive when he had differences of opinion with his colleagues.
That's right. Well, next week is our last one in this series. And the topic for next week is The Promised Revival, God's Mission Completed. My conversation partners will again be Dave and Daryl. I want to thank each of you for listening. I want to thank Chad Ofterhaar, our program engineer. For the good word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.